מסכת בבא בסייעתא דף מ"ב. המפקיד מעות אצל חברו סרן בפשילה נחוריו, או שמסרן לבנו ולביתו הקטנים, ונעל בפניהם שלא כראוי, חייב, שלא שימר כדרך השומרים, ואם שימר כדרך השומרים, פטור. Someone gives someone else some coins to watch, and the watchman, the שומר, if he binds it in a cloth and slings the cloth behind him, over his shoulder. That's case one. Or case two, he gives it to his minor son or daughter to watch. Or case three, he locks the door in front of the coins, but it's an inappropriate lock. Now she says that case three is actually part of case two. It's all one. He gives it to his minor kids and he locks them in the house, but not with a proper lock. But other commentaries say this is a third case, either giving it to the minor or putting it under a lock that's not that's a flimsy lock. And all these cases, if it gets stolen, the watchman is liable because he did not watch it in the manner of normal watchmen. These are insufficient ways to watch them. However, if he did watch it in a normal way that watchmen are supposed to watch things, and it gets stolen, then he is not liable. The Gemara will elaborate. Bishlama kulhu shelo shimer kederech hashomerim. Ela seran v'fshila nachorav mayava lemeavad. The Gemara says, I understand the other, says kulhu, sounds like the other two, which sounds like it's two other cases. So in the case where he give it to a kid, well, I gave you money to watch, and you give it to a child. Oh, how's the child going to watch it properly? Or you put it in a flimsy lock. Well, that's not watching it properly. So then we understand that the watchman should be liable. However, if he wrapped it up in a cloth and slung it behind him, right? What else? And then someone stole it. What do you want him to do? How is he supposed to watch it? Like this seems like a normal way to carry things. You sling it behind your back. Amarava, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Kerav Esarta Hakesef Biyadecha. Afa Pisha Sirurin Yu Biyadecha. A pasuk in Devarim regarding Maaser Sheni that you take the money and you bring it to Jerusalem. Over there, it says that you should bind the money in your hand, even though it's bound up. And you say, well, it's bound up. Isn't that protected? Not only that, it should also be in your hand. So by binding it up in a cloth and slinging it behind his back, well, then he can't see what happens to it. It makes it easy for someone to be a pickpocket and go and snatch some of the coins. While it's in the cloth behind his back, you can't see it. The proper, you can put other things behind your back, clothing, whatever. But money, you're supposed to bind it up and keep it in your hand. And so there's a hint to that in this pasuk. And therefore, this is an improper way to watch it if it's behind your back. V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak. לעולם יהיה כספו של אדם מסוי בידו, שנאמר וסתה כסף בידך. ואמר רבי יצחק, לעולם ישליש אדם את מעותיו, שליש בקרקע, ושליש בפרקמטיה, ושליש תחת ידו. Once we mention this pasuk, we're going to learn some financial advice, that a person should always have cash on hand. Don't hide all your money or invest all your money. Have some of it. As the pasuk says, bind up the money in your hand. Rabbi Yitzchak further elaborated, you should always divide your money into three parts. A third of it you should put in the ground, meaning you should invest in real estate, in a farm. A third of it you should do business with, buy and sell. And a third of it you should hold in your hand, meaning have cash on hand. You never know when you need it. ואמר רבי יצחק, אין הברכה מסויה אלא בדבר הסמוי מן העין, שנאמר, יסב אדוני תחת הברכה באסמך. More advice from Rabbi Yitzchak about monetary matters, that blessing is only found in something that's concealed from the eyes. As the Torah says, Hashem will give a blessing to everything in your storehouses. In other words, put it away and don't keep counting it and using it. Right, put it away, you get compound interest, and all right, that's where the blessing is. Tana de Rabbi Ishmael, in the beracha mesuyah ele b'davar she'en ha'ayin shuletet bo, she'ne'emar, yisav adonai techet ha'beracha ba'asamecha. Similar teaching, this from a baraita, from the school of Rabbi Ishmael. Beracha is found in something that the eye has no dominion over. Same from the same pasuk. Tenor Rabbanan, ha'olech lamodet gorno, omer, hira sumer lefanecha Hashem Elokeinu, she'tishlach beracha b'maaseh yadenu, hitchil lamod omer, baruch ha'sholech beracha b'kerim. Kli Haze. Madad ve'achar kach berach, hare ze tefilat shav lefi she'en ha'berucha mesuya, lo bedabar ha'shakul, ve'lo bedabar ha'madud, ve'lo bedabar ha'manui, ela bedabar ha'samui minayin shnemar, yisav al-nay techet ha'berucha ba'asamecha. Another teaching using the same pasuk, someone who goes to measure the grain that's on his threshing floor, there's not much is there. He's about to measure it. So he should say a prayer beforehand and say, may it be your will, Hashem, that you will bring blessing to the work of our hands, right? We worked and farmed and this is our produce. I hope that it'll come out to be a significant number. Once he starts measuring it, then there's no point in using the future tense. So I hope that you will bless what I am going to do, because that's for the future. If he didn't start measuring it, but once he starts already, then he didn't say this first prayer. Then he could say, "Blessed are you that you send." Blessing to this pile of grain in the present tense. However, if he already measured and only after that he makes a prayer, that is a vain prayer because, right, it's too late. You already measured it. It's 100 pounds. You already measured how much it is. So what are you going to pray now for? To retroactively change the past? It's not going to change it in the past. It's not going to change it now. As we know, the beracha is not found in something that is already weighed or already measured or already counted, but rather in something that is hidden from view. You're not going to have an open miracle happen and all of a sudden, right, the things in front of you jumps from 100 to 150 pounds. Right, if it's hidden away, then blessing can be there, but not if it's apparent. This is like the measurement problem in quantum physics. It's not determined until you actually measure it. The measuring, it makes it determined. So it's appropriate to pray before something happens, or even while you're doing it, but there's no point in praying after it already finished. Amar Shmuel, Kisafim en lahem shemira ela bekarka. Shmuel says, if you're going to safeguard money, your own, or especially someone else's, you're a shomer for someone else's, then the proper way to safeguard money is not sling it behind your back. We said you can carry it in your hands if you're taking it somewhere, but to safeguard it, you should bury it in the ground. Find some spot somewhere on your land, bury it down there, and no one knows where it is, and they won't find it. Harava says, but even Shmuel agrees that, let's say someone gives you some coins, can you wash this for me? And he gives it to you a few minutes before Shabbat starts. So now what are you going to do? You have to run out and dig a hole right then? No, you don't have to. The rabbis are not going to impose this difficulty on someone that they have to go and dig something right before Shabbat. So then you just put it away somewhere in the house. And you're not responsible if it gets stolen because you didn't have enough time. However, if after Shabbat finishes, you had enough time to bury it and you didn't bury it and it gets stolen, then you, the shomer, are liable. So if it got stolen immediately after Shabbat, I didn't even have time to bury it, and I didn't have time before, and I didn't have time after, then you're not liable. But once that amount of time, how long does it take? I don't know, an hour? Okay, so do you have an hour? Go and bury it as soon as possible to keep it safe. However, if the one who owns the coins, who's depositing it with you, is a sage, so then you have an excuse not to bury it right away, because you can figure, maybe this Torah scholar who gave me the money, he's going to want to say his own Havdalah. He's not going to use the one that they just said in Bet Knesset. And he's going to have to go and buy some wine for it. And he's going to need some money. So the shomer is allowed to say, you know, I'm going to wait a little because I know this. He's a Torah scholar. He's going to probably need to come and get some money from me for wine for Havdalah. So if you wait a little while and still don't bury it and it gets stolen, then you're not liable. But then after that, then you do have to go and bury it because that's the safest place. But nowadays, there's rummagers. They go around in people's fields and they put sticks in and look for loose dirt and holes in the ground and to look for money that people bury there. In other words, the thieves, they get wind that everybody's burying their coins in the fields. And so nowadays, it's not actually safe to put it in the field. Rather, it's good to put it in the beams of the roof. You know, you climb up to the attic and you put it in the beams of the roof, and that's hard to find. But nowadays, the thieves also figured that out. So these are these dismantlers. They come and they take apart the beams to look for hidden coins. So you know what? The best place to put them now is between the bricks in the walls. Rava says, even Shmuel would agree that if you put it in the wall, that's good, or between the corners of the house, that is a safe place. Even though Shmuel said up here that the only proper place, safe place, is in the ground, but he agrees that this is also similar. You're kind of burying it in the wall, you take off a brick, and you put the money in there, you replace the brick, and then that'll be hard to find. But nowadays, the thieves figured that out too. And you have these tappers, they tap on the wall to look for holes in the wall, or a place where a brick is loose. And so they look for it there. And therefore, nowadays, you could put it in the wall, but it has to be either near the ground or near the ceiling, because then when you tap over there, it won't shake, you won't hear the hollow behind the wall, because it's near the ground or near the top. So you see, it's not so easy to safeguard money in the olden days. Luckily, now we have banks, FDIC insured, so we don't have to worry so much about all these things. Now we're going to have a question about hiding money, but we can compare it to a case of chametz on Pesach. So the Mishnah in Pesachim says, if you have chametz in a house and a rock slide fell on it, in a house or outside, whatever, there's a bunch of rubble that fell on the chametz. So this is considered as if it's destroyed, right? You don't have to go and find it and burn it. That's destroyed. No one can get to it. Rabban Shimon Gamliel, however, says it's only considered destroyed if a dog would not be able to detect it, right? If it's this is just a little bit of debris on it and a dog could go and smell it and get it out, then that's not considered destroyed. It has to be under a lot of rubble. V'tana kamacha fisat hakeleb sheloshat tefachim. As the Braita says, how much can a dog detect? He says, a dog can detect under 3 handbreadths. So if it's 3 handbreadths or less, then it's not considered destroyed. But if there's at least 3 handbreadths or more of rubble on top of the chametz, then that's considered destroyed. So that's true for chametz. Here's our question. Hachamai, mi ben shalosha tefachim olo. What about if you're burying coins? Is it the same thing? In order for it to be properly safeguarded, do you have to bury it in a hole that's at least 3 tefachim deep or not? And the answer is, Amale hata mishum recha ba'inan shelosha tefachim hasham hacha mishum ikasuye me'ayna la ba'inan shelosha tefachim. This is no, in that case, it's because of the smell. The dog can smell the chametz if it's less than three handbreadths. That's why, in order for it to be destroyed, it has to be more than 3 handbreadths where the dog can't smell it and won't get it. But here, regarding the money, hiding money, we're not worried about the dog smelling it, but just it has to be hidden from the eye. As we said before, that blessing only comes from something hidden from the eye, and it's also safeguarding. It has to be something that no one can see. So therefore, it doesn't need 3 handbreadths. So how much do you need? From Sichra said, just 1 handbreadth of dirt, right? Cover it over, and then nobody can see it. And that is sufficient to hide it. Hahu gavra dafked zuze gabe chabre otbinu besrifa de urbane ignub. Now we're going to have a series of a few stories of watchmen. And so this one, someone gave someone else some money to watch, and the shomer put it in a willow hut. And then it got stolen. Amar of Yosef, afagav delinyan ganabe netidutahi, linyan nura pshiutahi, hava techilato bepshia vesofo beones hayav. Rav Yosef ruled on this case and says, even though you put it in a hut, so that's considered safeguarding from thieves, but it's not proper safeguarding from fire. A willow hut is very flammable, and therefore you did the wrong thing. You were, as a shomer, you were negligent because you put it in a flammable place. Now in the end, it's true, it didn't go on fire, it was instead stolen. Nevertheless, because you were negligent in one way, And even though in the end it was an accident that was beyond your control because you locked it properly, but because you did something wrong in the first place, you are nevertheless liable. And so he said, this Shomer is liable. That's one version. The other version is the opposite. It says, even though regarding fire, he was negligent, and therefore, if it went on fire, he would have to pay. But he did lock it up properly in terms of from theft, and therefore, even though he was negligent at the beginning because of fire, in the end, it was actually stolen, and there's nothing he could have done to prevent that. I mean, he did what he had to do to prevent theft, and therefore, he's not liable. But halacha is like the first version. That if you start off doing something wrong, even if in the end it gets stolen, not because of what you did wrong, nevertheless, you are liable. Next story. Someone gave to his friend some coins to watch. And then after a while, the owner of the coin said, can you give me back my coins, please? Now I'd like to use them. And the shomer looks around and says, I don't know where I put them. I put them in a really good hiding spot. It's so good. I don't even know where they are myself. And so they came to Rava to see who's responsible. And he said, any shomer who doesn't know where he put the items that he's supposed to be safeguarding, that's negligent. And so therefore, the shomer has to pay. The shomer, he has an obligation, number one, to safeguard it, put it in a hiding place, and number two, to know where the hiding place is, right? This is just a basic requirement, basic responsibility. So the shomer is liable. Hahu gavra daf kedzuze gabe chavre, ash lamin hu le'ime, ve'otminu be kareta lita ve'ignub. Someone gave his friend some money to deposit. The shomer gave it to his mother, and his mother put it in a chest or a basket, and then it was stolen from there. So who's responsible? Amarava, hechini dayenu dayane lahai dinarava. I said, what should the judges rule in this case? It's kind of complicated. Is it the shomer? Is it shomer's mother? Or maybe neither of them are responsible. So nema le lidide zil shalem. So let's tell the shomer, go and pay. This guy gave you money, and you don't have it anymore. So you weren't safeguarding it yourself. You gave it to someone else to safeguard. So you shouldn't have done that. So maybe the shomer should be responsible. Amar kol mafkid al dat ishto banavu mafkid. But the shomer can say, we have a general principle that if you deposit money with someone, then you have in mind also that that person is not going—he's not going to be home all the time, and that person is going to depend on the shomer's wife and his children also to watch it for him. So it doesn't mean literally only wife and children. It means members of his household, members of his family. And so his mother was there and says, listen, I'm not going to be home. He told his mother, hey, can you watch this for me? And so that's proper. So shomer didn't do anything wrong. If the shomer gave it to a third party altogether, then the owner can say, I gave it to you to watch, not to that third party. But if it's a member of the shomer's family, then that shomer did a proper job. So the shomer shouldn't have to pay. So we say, let's go to the mother and make her pay because she only put it in a basket. She should have buried it, right? We said above that you have to bury it for proper in order for it to be a proper safeguarding. But she can claim, well, my son didn't tell me that it belongs to someone else. I thought it was his money. And so, it was my own son's money. So I don't have to be so careful with it. Right? Because, he trusts me. And this is where we put it. If he told me that it belongs to someone else, then I would have been, oh, this is very careful. I have a professional job here to do, and I would have buried it. So it's not my responsibility to pay because he didn't tell me that I'm acting as a professional shomer here for someone else. I would have to bury it, so therefore I don't have to pay. Now, so now we go back to the shomer and say, you're responsible. Why didn't you tell your mother that this belongs to someone else, that so she would safeguard it properly in the ground? And the shomer can say, well, you shouldn't penalize me for that. It's actually Oh, better for you that it didn't tell her, because she thought it was mine, right? So does a mother love anybody better than her son and wants to safeguard and have the well-being of her son? So she, not knowing that it was a third party, third party's money, would be even more careful with it, thinking that's her son's money. And from in her mind, she thought, this is my son's money. I better be really careful with it. It belongs to my son. And so she put it in this basket where she considered it to be very safe. And therefore, it was a proper safeguarding. And it would not have been better safeguarded if the Shomer had said, it's not my money, someone else's. And if anything, that would have been worse. And therefore, he's not responsible either. Ela amarava mishtaba ihu dehanhu zuze ashlemin hu leime mishtabeda ime dehanhu zuze otbinu bekar talita veignuv patur. So rather, Rava ruled that the shomer takes an oath that he gave it to his mother. His mother has to make an oath that she put it in the chest and that was a good spot and was stolen from there. And the shomer and his mother are both exempt. Sometimes it happens. You give something to a shomer. The shomer did a proper job, but it was something out of their control and it was stolen. Then the shomer does not have to pay.
Hahu apotropadiatme disban lehu toraliatme umsare le bakara lahavule kache vishinel mechal umit. Amar Rami Barchama hechene dainu dayanel haidina. Next case is a steward over the property of orphans. He went and took some of the money of the orphans and he bought an ox on their behalf for their benefit. And he gave the ox to a cow herder to take care of. Turns out this ox that he bought had no molars and no teeth, and so he could not eat, and it died in the hands of the cow herder. So the case came to Rami Bar Chama and says, what should be the ruling in this case? Who is responsible? The cow herder, the steward, or the guy who sold the ox in the first place? Well, let's see. Nema lela potropazil shalem. Amar ana lebakara misertes. So first they say to the steward, you pay, right, for this dead ox. What are you doing buying an ox without teeth? You didn't notice it has no teeth and you didn't tell the cow herder, go pay. So the steward could say, listen, I bought this cow. I paid the right price for it. I gave it to the cow. The cow herder is responsible for taking care of it. The cow herder should have noticed that it has no teeth, it's not eating, and smashed up food for it that it could swallow, or tell me that it's not eating. He's responsible for it. So it's not my problem. Go to him. So they go to the cow herder. You have to pay for it. You're supposed to take care of this ox. Look how it died of hunger. You didn't feed it. Amar ana behade tore okimte uchla shedai le lahava yedainan de la achal. And so the cowherder says, listen, I don't just take care of one ox. I take care, I put it with all the other oxen, I threw some food before it, all the oxen, they're hungry, they eat. So I didn't know that this one didn't eat. I wasn't paying attention to this one in particular. However, the Gemara says, but this cow herder, he is a shomer, he's getting paid for his work. So he has to check. He does have to check. If there's an ox that is not eating, is looking hungry, is sickly, he does have to go and check it out and see what's going on. Why is it not eating? So he has to be responsible. And so we conclude, in fact, if the orphans are out money because of this, they paid money for this cow, and then now the cow herder, who's paid to watch it, didn't do a good job, and it died on his watch, then, in fact, the cow herder would have to pay the orphans. So that's true. But here, the case is a little bit more complicated. Here we're talking about a case where the orphans are not out any money because the orphans were able to find the original owner of the ox and they said, you sold us an ox without teeth. This is mekach ta'ut. Give us our money back. And they got their money back. So the orphans are fine. Elaman katayin. So who's making a claim? Who's out of money? Mare de Torah katayin, the original owner of the ox, because he doesn't have the ox. He paid. He gave back the sale price, and now his ox, right, was left to die by the cowherder. The previous owner's claim is that the steward who bought it from me should have come back and said, listen, it's not eating. He should have told me it's not eating. Now we ask on that, what do you mean that original owner is waiting for someone to tell him that his own ox that he owned before has no teeth and that it's mekach ta'ut? He should know that he owned it before. He doesn't know that it doesn't have teeth. What was he doing it with the whole time before that? How was it eating, right? Why didn't it die from hunger before? So obviously he must have known that it didn't have teeth and he was mushing up some grain to feed it. So why is he saying, oh, well, you didn't tell me, I didn't know. And the answer is, b'safsirat izban mehacha uzben lehacha. We're talking about where there was an agent, a middleman, a broker, who just made the connection between the seller and the steward, who is the buyer. And so this agent, because he's just a middleman, he's just connecting the buyer and the seller, he didn't know that it had no teeth. So he cannot be held responsible. Okay, and so he's saying, listen, I took the money from you and I gave it to the other guy, but I wasn't holding on to the animal, not at all, or not for very long. And that's why I didn't know, but you should have told me he wasn't eating, and then I would have given your money back. And therefore, the final verdict is that the middleman should make a vow that he didn't know that it has no teeth. He sold it in good faith, and no one told him back that it wasn't. If they had told him, listen, this ox that you sold us has no teeth, so what would he have done? Well, he might have reversed the sale, or he might have just taken the cow and the ox and killed it on the spot and sold it for its meat. So at least it would be worth something. It wouldn't just die of hunger and not be usable at all. And therefore, because the cow herder was negligent and did not pay attention to the fact that it's not eating, the cow herder doesn't have to pay back full price for what the cow was bought for, but rather just has to pay about 2/3 of that, the value of the meat of the ox at its cheapest price, not the value of a live healthy ox, but only the cheapest value that the meat would go for, because that's what the seller could have gotten out of it. And so this is a compromise situation, because it's no one's 100% fault. In particular, the steward thought he was doing a good job for the orphans, and he bought this ox and gave it to the guy to wash, so he's okay, and the orphans got their money back, so they're fine. Now the original owner, he used a middleman. The middleman didn't know. He said, you should have told me, and then I would have given you your money back, or I would have killed the animal. The cow herder is the most at fault. And therefore, he has to pay, but he doesn't have to pay a full amount, because it wasn't worth a full amount. So it was worth what the meat at that time would have been worth, and so that's what he has to pay. Last story, Hahu Gavra de Afked, Kishuta Gabe Habre, a hops owner, give some hops to the Shomer, and can you wash these hops for me? Havale ledide nami karya de kashtichuta, but the Shomer had his own hops also, so they're in two different piles. Amale lisarse mehai reme. So the Shomer, he wants to make some beer. He tells the brewer, go get the hops in this pile, from my pile. Azal demame idach, but the brewer goes to the mafkid's pile, the one that doesn't belong to the shomer. Amado Amram hechi nidainu dayana lehaidina. So the case comes to Avraham Ram, and he asks his colleagues, what should we do in this case? Who is responsible? Is it the shomer? Is it the brewer? Or maybe neither of them, because it was just a mistake, and the original owner has to eat his loss. So let's go to the Shomer. It says, listen, he gave you hops to watch, and you use them, so you have to pay for them. The Shomer says, it's not my fault. Go get it from the brewer, because I told him to take from my own pile, and he made a mistake, so it's his problem. Let him pay. Okay, so we go to the brewer, you pay. The brewer says, he didn't tell me take from this pile and not that pile. I thought he was just giving a suggestion that, you know, take from this pile, it's probably better. But I went, I looked, and the other one was better or was closer.
So he didn't know that this was a command, don't take from that pile. He thought it was just a suggestion, so he picked from one. So you can't blame the brewer either. Now, if the piles were in different locations and the hops of the shomer were closer, and then and he said, okay, go get the hops, the closer one that's only a minute away, and the guy doesn't come back till a half hour later. So then the shomer should know, well, why didn't he come back after 2 minutes? It was right there. Oh, he must have gone in to the other pile that doesn't belong to me, and it took him so long, and still the shomer didn't say anything. That means he knows that the brewer went and took a fire pile that wasn't his, and he didn't care. So he should definitely have to pay. So what do I say? No, we're talking about a case where they were equidistant and it didn't take any longer for one than the other. And so really, the shomer did not know. Sof sof, mai peseda ika, veha ka mishtar shile. Now we ask, but what loss is there? Isn't there a profit? He took the hops, he made them into beer. Beer is worth more than hops. So let him pay from the value of the beer that he made for the value of the hops that he took even by mistake. And so everybody still has a profit. So one answer of Rav Sama, the son of Rava, is that the beer turned into vinegar, went bad, and is now worth nothing. And so the owner, the shomer can say, listen, by mistake, your pops were turned into beer. The beer is worth zero, but it's not my fault, and it's not the brewer's fault all either. So you get nothing. Or another answer, Rav Shemar bechiseh. We're talking about where there were thorns mixed into the hops and it made the beer bad. And so he can give him the value of the hops with the thorns, which is not very much, but it's something. So he says, listen, here's your hops. Your hops were turned into beer, thorny beer. And so here you can take it. It's not going to be worth so much, but that's the situation. That's what it is. It's not the shomer's fault and it's not the brewer's fault, unless they knew and purposely took that guy's hops, then it's a problem. But neither of them is at fault, and therefore the owner of the hops is going to lose some or all of his hops. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.